Desert Healthcare District and Foundation presents a podcast that supports your health and wellness where you live. This is Healthy Desert, Healthy You, hosted by Will Dean. Now, here's Will.
Hello, friends. Today we are in for a special treat. My guest is Melinda Cordera Barcega, who is the Associate Director of Programs and a co-founder of Visión y Compromiso. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you, Will. It's great to be here with you.
I'm so happy that you're here. So I want to start out and just, for the listeners who may not be familiar with the concept of promotores, would you talk a little bit about what that means and what Visión y Compromiso does?
Absolutely. So promotoras and promotores, because there are men doing this work. Most of them are most promotores are promotoras, are women, are individuals that are in communities doing peer-to-peer health education, health outreach, health promotion, and really serving their communities with great heart to bridge, I would say, disparities and bring health equity to those communities, to those families, and to those communities. The promotora model, as it's known, is a model that has come to the U.S. really from other parts of the world. It exists in other countries and continents and has so since the 1700s. You know, we have Russian Feldishers is what they promotor, their version of promotoras was called. We have barefoot doctors in China. We have men and women doing this kind of work throughout Latin America, a lot of them doing this work through non-governmental organizations, and some doing it with the government, really embraced by those governments as resources, human resources, in many communities where there's a lack of monetary resources. And so partnering with communities to bring forward some type of a health message, health prevention, initiative, strategy focused on any given subject. It could be immunizations, it could be water, it could be environmental health, it could be mental health, it could be reproductive health, it could be many different things. And many of those countries have worked with community to be able to build equity for those communities. And so the promotora, or that person that we here in the States call a promotora, is key to the model. And I can talk more about the characteristics that makes them so unique to do this work, but that's how we at Visión y Compromiso understand this model as it has grown over time and is now in the United States as a key model to work with community and in community.
Thank you for that historical perspective of the origin. So I want to go back a little bit and talk about starting Visión y Compromiso as a co-founder. What brought that about? What did you want to accomplish with starting this organization?
Yeah, well, really it was driven by the promotoras themselves. So we're celebrating 25 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. This year of having started just this conversation and listening to the voices of promotoras in their communities throughout the state of California. And for many of them, 25 years ago, they were not networked. They were working in silos within their own organizations, providing the services of their organizations with those communities, but really not working together. The other thing is that most promotoras at that time throughout the state of California were not employees. They were volunteers or they were considered an independent contractor. So they were paid by class or by activity. And so yet they were serving communities and doing very essential work for those organizations. And specifically in the healthcare realm is where we have seen a lot of these programs develop. And so part of their assessment of their own role was that they saw that programs were coming and going, funding was coming and going. It was very issue-based, and their organizations, I think, faced the challenge. And I still very much so. I mean, this is still very much a reality for them that, you know, we have funding today for this project and later we may not have that same funding. Things have improved a bit, but at the time it was really something that started and ended. They were all pilot projects working with specific communities to get certain information and resources out. And promotores also were not being paid fairly for their work. So that, coupled with organizations losing funding, was really what they brought to us. And what really, I think, led us to say, rather than only work with promotoras themselves, we really need to form an organization that could reflect this reality, advocate for them as a workforce in California, and now we do that nationally. And I think bring more resources to the organizations that they are affiliated with. And so we've also started an alliance or an alianza with small and medium-sized organizations. This is a newer effort. It's only about a year old, where we're really bringing together those organizations to talk about the issues that they face, to have consistent funding to do their work, and to have this model in place in communities. Because at the end of the day, who is most impacted is the community that no longer has that resource and the promotora that is in service to and for that community who may or may not have a job anymore. And so that's ultimately what we're trying to get at, is to solve that and really build the promotora model into the fabric of our delivery of services.
You know, I love the fact that the promotoras understood early on the value of what they were doing and bringing to the community and coming to you and other co-founders and saying that basically what they need to continue doing this really important work in the community.
Absolutely.
So I love that. I imagine it's challenging to quantify the contributions of promotoras to a community's health and wellness. Can you provide some examples of how they have made a difference? I can think of some myself, being with the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation, but can you share a few examples?
Absolutely. You know, I think that there are ways to, I think, put a number to it, you know, the return on investment. There are ways to do that where we can see that more people are utilizing their healthcare. Mm-hmm. There are less visits to emergency rooms. When you have a team of promotoras working on, you know, let's say chronic disease management, you know, and you see patients that are now accessing their primary care providers and not going to the ER for their care. There are ways to really put a number to that. I think that really concretely, and in the Coachella Valley, to really bring it home here, I think you and I both saw how essential they were during COVID.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the most recent example, and one that I think really raised the attention on them, and I think brought forward the, or elevated the understanding of how valuable they are, because they really can interpret, translate culturally, so linguistically and culturally, the importance of a vaccine, or the importance of getting tested, or protecting yourself, and why. And hearing it from someone that is representative of that community is incredibly powerful, more powerful than any given other, you know, healthcare professional. It's coming from, you know, your neighbor or your comadre, you know, the person you trust.
Exactly.
And the person that is, you know, is not here to sell you anything or convince you of anything, but rather really cares about you and your health and your well-being. And so that is one clear example, and one that has really elevated, I think, the role of promotoras throughout the state, throughout the country, and especially here in the Coachella Valley.
Right. The promotoras are really essential during our COVID-19 response, as you said, because there was so much misinformation what this pandemic was. Mm-hmm. And it was so easy not to trust the information that you were hearing, and then to have someone from your community come to you and tell you what is actually happening and what you need to do to protect yourself. That was such an invaluable part of our response.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what it's done also, it's created a building block. And so based on that, and that positioning of promotoras in communities, now when they talk about mental health or reducing social isolation, which is one of, you know, your initiatives as well, and one that we partner with you on, or environmental health and the importance of caring for our environment, it really resonates with community. It's the same person talking to them about COVID that is now talking to them about a different topic. And so that trust continues, and that's essential for our public health teams, our healthcare providers. It's an extension of the work that they do to help communities be well, and it lives in community with community. And that I think is what's so powerful about this model, that it is kind of building these bridges between, you know, information that might not be as accessible, but bringing it to folks in a way that really resonates, I think, and people feel like they have agency over their own life, you know, because they understand the information, they understand the resources, they understand their rights as well to it, and can then put it into action.
Right. And they have relationships. They've established relationships with the members of the community.
That's right.
So that's very important. You talked about the promotoras model expanding nationally. One thing that I read some years ago, and I don't know if this is accurate, I read that there was this movement to get certification, state certification for promotoras in California. Is that accurate? Is that something that's happening? Has it happened? Or...
There was, and it was specific to the CalAIM movement, which is a Medi-Cal movement, and that attempt happened. I think where we came in and where Promotoras came in was really coming to the table to talk about what that is. And why that is, and what is the purpose to certify when you have so many organizations that have for years, more than 35 years, provided training to community members to do this great work and built relationships. So it's the community-based organizations like those that we have here in the Coachella Valley who have built those relationships with community and have provided that training, that capacity building, that relationship building with communities. And so that idea that now those organizations need to provide that they need to have some type of statewide certification really didn't make a lot of sense, nor to the promotoras, nor to a lot of the organizations. Why do we need to do that? The relationship we have is built on trust. And that is almost the biggest certification we need, the relationships. While we understand that any healthcare professional needs to have, or we need to ensure that they have proper knowledge, that they have proper skill, that they understand the information, the organizations that have been doing training have been doing that for years. They've been ensuring that all those checks and balances are there. And so this statewide movement really, I think, what it proposed to do, or the unintended consequences of what could have happened, is to exclude those very same leaders that have built the trust and the respect from being in those positions, because it was asking for, well, they're going to meet a certain minimum requirement in terms of English. They're going to have a certain minimum requirement in terms of formal education, which was not defined. That has not been the case right now, and we're doing okay. And so there was a lot of pushback by those of us in this space working with promotoras, other CBOs, Vision y Compromiso as well, really questioning, I think, the Department of Health to ask, what are you asking to be certified? Is it a skill? Are they going to go out and take blood pressure? Well, of course, you need to make sure that that person knows how to take the blood pressure, how to read it, how to communicate that result. but are we talking about health education? So there wasn't a lot of clarity about what it was. And the state began that process. They wanted then to have organizations that were doing training to meet a certain standards and have it be the same. And we actually, as an organization, began to build our own curriculum, or I should say tweak our curriculum so it could meet some of those standards, because our curriculum basically did, as well as other organizations started to do the same. But really, I think they got a lot of pushback from the promotoras themselves to say, if you're going to ask me for a minimum of English, I'm going to have to leave the work I'm doing to be able to do that. Is that totally necessary? Is there another way to do it? And so what we put before the state are other alternatives. You know, turn it back to those organizations that have been doing this training. Let's build a coalition. Let's build this structure or infrastructure together. Let's look at what are the resources we have. So they have since paused that movement to certify. So that it's on hold, and that's where it sits right now.
So I was going to ask about, is there a network? But it sounds like there is. You talked about a coalition of other organizations like Vision and Compromiso. So you are in conversation with other organizations that primarily work with or provide promotoras?
We are. Okay. We are. So there are several, I would say, several coalitions throughout the state of California. Some have been initiated by funders, like the California Wellness Foundation, who has a initiative where they have local coalitions in specific areas of the state of California. I think they funded 4 or 5 specific communities, large communities. And there's those coalitions. We have a statewide alliance that we have formed with the small and medium-sized organizations to really build more capacity, to really, I think, for ourselves, identify what are those needs that we have to continue doing this work and implementing this model of peer-to-peer community, not only based, but I think community-driven. And so we do have that and are in conversation with them. And when these conversations were happening at the state, we pulled on that alliance to say, this is what is happening. So doing a lot of that translation many times is kind of what we do as an organization, to say, okay, this is what the state is saying. What is the reality that you face? What is the potential, almost always unintended, consequence of this to you as an institution, and bringing those voices forward. And so those voices did come forward, and I think the state had a lot of pushback. They were well intended. They really wanted to see how we could have these standards in order for us to then be able to draw down federal money, to be able to do some other things, right, that are constructive and are, I think, they create viability for our programs to continue. But then there were other things that were not clear and could then have that potential unintended consequence again of excluding people who have been for years been the trusted messengers
and doing the work.
Yes.
So when you were in conversation with the state, did you feel that the organization was being listened to? I know a lot of times when we talk about state certification or any sort of certification like that, a lot of times the people who are most affected are not at the table involved in the conversation. So you did feel that you were being listened to? And
absolutely. Okay. The state representatives actually listened to our suggestion to have, they had a whole host of listening sessions throughout the state.
Okay.
And many of those at the beginning were not being translated, or they weren't even held in Spanish. And so understanding this workforce is mainly a Spanish-speaking workforce, they allowed us to be a partner with them. So we built this relationship with them to help them understand and I think build a partnership to bring those voices in. And they listened and heard heard the voices on their own and could see, okay, we do need to tweak our process here. We need to open this up. Perhaps we're being very narrow in how we're obtaining this information. And so we did, I think, form a great partnership, and they continue to be partners. You know, everything's on hold right now because this was last year. And, you know, they put a hold. And so, you know, things are drastically different in our current reality with our current budget. And I think much of those conversations will be on hold for a while.
Okay. So tell me, how does one become a promotor? I imagine there are different avenues to take, but is it generational? Is it family members bring on other family members? How does that work?
Well, it's interesting that you say that about other family members, because I think the greatest mentor or model is another promotora. Mm-hmm. I think that that's what makes it so accessible. So a promotora is out in her community, and her community is watching her, and people say, well, how do I do what you do? I like helping my community. I like being in this role. I'm doing it already naturally. I may be doing it at my children's school. I may be doing it through my faith community. I may be doing it as a volunteer at a senior center. How do I do this formally, and how do I affiliate with an organization that would engage me in this role? And so, yes, so many promotoras themselves are inspired by others. And whether it's generational is also an interesting question, because we see many more youth entering this space because they see their mother, typically, sometimes their father, and sometimes we have whole families that are doing this work. It's wow. Kind of the way you do work. I mean, if you're at home and you watch your family or your parents, and like, we have to go to a meeting, and so what are you doing at that meeting? Oh, we're meeting with community members. You know, you start to see that, and your parents become your role models, right? And so we're seeing more youth enter it formally. And I have to say, you know, there are organizations throughout the state of California, nationally, and of course, serving the Coachella Valley, that provide training, formal training for promotoras. We are indeed one of them. And we provide an invitation to folks that would like to do this work, and really provide them a fundamental skill-based training to do this work. Other organizations may do some of that skill-based type of training, and then they add on a topic, because they may be, you know, the American Heart Association, the American Lung Association, the American Cancer Society has had promotoras, or they may be a community-based organization that receive funding to do social connectedness work like you all have funded to do, right? And so we've actually partnered locally with, you know, one of the senior centers that received this funding to train their staff on this skill building training. And then they'll add the topic that they want those promotores or navigators, I think as you all are calling them, to focus on, right? So we don't typically go out and do training focused on a specific topic. We do that for our own teams. We really do provide more of these core competencies to do this work to promotoras and to organizations that also contract us to do training. And so as a community member, it's really about being connected to a community-based organization that may put out a call for, we're looking for promotoras or people to do this kind of work. You'll see the model also in clinics, and typically the title is a community health worker.
Right.
And you'll see that person who is called because, or invited or hired because they know that community, they're from that community, and they're trusted in that community. And we see it here. We see it here in the Coachella Valley, and also in the non-Latino community. We see it in the Black community too, where there are community health workers that are doing this work, and they are that trusted messenger for that community. So it really, you know, we like to say the heart has no color. Really, it is about a trusted individual in a community working with community. And that's how this model really works.
And there's a lot to be said about cultural competency as well, especially when dealing with healthcare. So you mentioned the work that your team is doing here in the Coachella Valley, but I understand, is Vision and are you regional? You have promotoras in other parts of the region, right?
We do. So our organization does a lot of training and capacity building for existing promotoras throughout the state and the nation. Internally, we do have our own promotora teams, so we do manage projects and conduct outreach, health education, and health promotion. So we currently employ about 120 promotoras throughout the state of California. Some of them are here in the Coachella Valley,
right,
and others are in the Central Valley and Northern California and Los Angeles and San Diego and more. It really is based on the partnerships that we build with institutions in those regions. And we basically get into a relationship and carry out those work plans, those projects, and meet, you know, and work on the deliverables at hand. So we do have our own teams on staff.
Excellent. That's a lot of people.
Yes, it is a lot of people. It is a lot of people.
So I've read that promoters are described as advocates for social justice and effective role models. Could you talk a little bit about that and what that actually means?
Yes. So the model, while it has for many years centered around health and health access, really it is a model of transformation and where we move people not only from receiving information and resources in order to make informed decisions about their own care, their own wellness, their own health care. What we have seen, and this is really described by promotoras themselves, is where we see the change happen is when those very same communities begin to take control of their own lives and become engaged in their own wellness. And by doing that, become advocates for themselves and as a result want to also see other people have this wellness or not suffer or not have these resources. And so those agents of change, that's what that means.
Okay.
And, you know, some time ago, the California Endowment engaged us in doing some work to really understand the model when they started their Building Healthy Communities initiative, where they had the 10 sites and the Coachella Valley was one of those sites. We, along with two other sister organizations, one in Orange County, one in LA, were brought together to really talk about, well, why is this model so successful? What is it? So we went around and interviewed promotoras and said, you tell us, you know, you tell the story. And so we really asked them, what is the magic in the work you do? How is it that you are so successful in reaching communities and really beginning, you know, getting changes to occur? And so they talked about really what we now call our theory of change, which is really one, building relationships is key to doing the work that they do and we do. Those relationships really lead to that trust that I talked about before. You know, for COVID, you can come back with mental health and more.
Right.
And those individuals begin to get involved in those changes themselves. They're inspired by that work themselves, get engaged in it, and begin to see that transformation in themselves and want to be part of the larger transformation in community and become voices for it. And so become or are already natural advocates. It's not that they become advocates because of this. They are already natural advocates. We all want a better life. We all want a dignified life. And so that process happens very organically and naturally. And that's how we then engage more people to do this work and to serve communities.
I love that. It's like helping yourself. And when you learn to do what is best for yourself, then you share that with the people that you know, and it goes out further into the community.
Absolutely.
I love that. You mentioned that promotoras are primarily women. Are we seeing more men come into this field, or How is that?
We are. We okay. are seeing more men and also a lot of partners of,
okay.
of a lot of the women that are engaged. There is definitely a need for more men. We have seen, you know, I've been doing this work for 34 years and it has always mainly been women, and not only in the U.S., in all parts of the world. Really, women are the ones that get engaged in these, you know, social well-being types of initiatives. And, you know, we are caretakers. We are caretakers of children and families and have this role many times given to us, many times assumed by us. But, you know, we take it on and we really create a lot of change. In the U.S., we are seeing many more men engaged. And I'll tell you, there are specific spaces where I, in my own history, have seen it. And when HIV in the 80s was going on, there were many men, and still are, working as community health workers in the Bay Area, really going into spaces like bathhouses and other places to spread the news and spread the message about protection
right.
and testing and, you know, safe sex, et cetera. So there are spaces where we see many more men, and also when there are programs that really do engage men in an honorable way, in a respectful way, not in a way where, you know, women are going to come in and tell you how to do things, but where we can engage men to really be their own advocates and their own source of strength and information. Men thrive. Many years ago, I had a pilot program for men, and it was a man who was driving. He was a coordinator, and it worked because it was just like for women. It was for and by them. And when we do that, we have more men who come into the space and are willing to enter this, you know, predominantly female or woman workforce. But yes, we do see many more. And there's much more to be done there.
Right. Let's talk about the future of Promotoras. In an ideal world, where would you like to see this calling, this profession in 10, 20 years?
I would love to see more of it integrated formally into the systems of care. It's something we strive for. It's our big picture goal that we know is an ongoing strategic goal. Is really, I think it's where we started, and it's where we hope to go. It's our vision of what we say in Spanish, hacia una vida digna y sana, which means towards a dignified and healthy life. That's what we hope for all communities. We happen to be doing it through Promotoras, through the very folks that are in community and building their skills, their capacity, and also doing the same for the systems to understand their value. So we do it with Promotoras, and we build that workforce, and we provide training, and we prepare them to enter those spaces. And we're also doing it with the very systems, the organizations or government systems or other systems, to understand how this model could be so effective for our communities, could really bring more humanity to the care that we provide to our, you know, to our patients, to our clients. And so there are systems where this model works really well, and there are systems where it needs to be in so it works, so that system works better. So, you know, you can be discharged from a hospital, for example, and not given any instructions on what to do next. You need a promotora. You need a navigator there. You need someone to, when you go home, help you understand, what did the doctor say at discharge about those medications and those things I have to put on my back or whatever it is. That kind of position would be so invaluable and powerful to really ensuring that that patient leaves feeling that they have all that they need to be effective in their care at home for their own wellness. So our big vision is, let's bring dignity and humanity to that individual and all of us, and let's do it by integrating this model and having folks like this who we can trust help us navigate this very complex healthcare system and, you know, dysfunctional in many ways, so that we all have, you know, an assured wellness.
You know, sometimes I leave the doctor's office myself and I feel like I need, right? I need that additional navigation.
Right.
Yeah.
We all do. It's confusing, and managing our health is complex. But imagine if you could have a promotora or a promotor you can turn to and call and say, you know, can you like break this down a little bit for me? Because the doctor only had 5 minutes or 10 minutes to explain it to me, and have that person do that for you. I mean, that's who promotoras are, and do it very much from the heart, what we call servicio de corazón, a service from the heart.
So for the listeners who are learning about promotoras for the first time through this conversation that we're having, what is like one thing, if there's one takeaway that you want to leave with them, what is that?
I think I would say, you know, promotoras are advocates for you. I think that if we are fortunate to have someone in our community that we can trust, that we can turn to, that can be our go-to, we have that privilege. You know, we have that privilege to be able to work with someone that way. The promotora model is a powerful community empowerment model. That's where it stems from, and that's what it's meant to be. That is its essence. And it's not only empowerment for that individual, but it's for you as an individual, and for your family, and for your community.
Where can people learn more about Visión y Compromiso?
I think our website would probably be the best place to go. Our social media is very popular, especially among promotoras, and we have a Facebook and an Instagram page that you can find with our name. But our website, so visioncompromiso.org, is the best place to go. Learn more about the model, read some of the papers we've written about the model and its effectiveness, and also learn about the events that are going on throughout the state of California, virtually as well as nationally.
Melinda, thank you for the work that you're doing, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Healthy Desert, Healthy You. This podcast is a production of the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation in Palm Springs, California. For more information, please visit the website dhcd.org. Our annual conference site is healthydeserthealthyyou.com. This podcast is available at most major podcast portals, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Captivate.fm, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe.